You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA and a certified financial planner on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen each and every week online at wdiy.org. Welcome to the show. Today is January 23rd, 2013. The markets were up today, the Dow closing at 13,779, the NASDAQ at 3153, and the S&P closed at 1494. Happy to have you all here. Last week, I discussed important due dates. Seems like a lifetime ago. I can hardly remember last week's show. Tonight, I'm going to discuss job searches and using a recruiter and why that is important, and especially important when we talk about financial choices. So about putting yourself in the best position you can for job searches. We are live. Andrea is with us and she will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while we do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The number to call in this evening is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So tonight, how job searchers can put themselves in strong positions. And I have a guest with me this evening who is calling in for the show, and her name is Bonnie Sharps. With 30 years in the industry, Bonnie serves as Managing Director and Executive Vice President in the growing Philadelphia office of DHR International, specializing in executive searches in life sciences, healthcare, and healthcare services, advanced technology, and industrial sectors. Bonnie, are you on the line?
I am.
Hi, Bonnie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. I each week, we try to have a topic about financial subjects that affect people's lives. And when I saw your background and saw the area of expertise you had, I thought it would be a great opportunity to talk about putting people in their best position and getting some tips on that for when they're going to apply for new jobs. And I know you specialize in executives and CEOs and all of that, but I do know that you also specialize in some of the healthcare services, which is very in demand up here in the Lehigh Valley. So with that introduction, I would also like to give you the opportunity to tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself and what you do and why you enjoy it.
Well, thank you, Lori, and I really want to say that it's a pleasure to be on your show. As you said, I am with DHR International, which is one of the largest retained executive search firms in the world. But prior to joining DHR, I spent almost 30 years in both a corporate setting and also in a startup company. Initially, I joined a company called Shared Medical Systems right out of graduate school and had the wonderful opportunity to grow with that company. I ultimately became a vice president in the field or the sales organization, and then I moved and became a VP in the product development group. We were subsequently acquired by Siemens, where I was a general manager and remained for a few years. And then after 25 years total, I left Siemens and joined a startup company. And then after a couple more years, I went into executive search, where I've been for 8 years.
Wow, what a career. So, and lots of experience from many different angles.
Well, it's been fun, and I'll try to bring some of that experience to bear as we go through the show.
That's great. That's great. Well, I want to mention to the listeners that I write a quarterly article or column, as it may be called, for a local magazine in our area, and it's called Lehigh Valley Woman Magazine, and I try to have different topics each quarter, and the most recent article I wrote was called Return on Investment. It's More Than You Think, and in that I talked about a number of different things, but one of the items that I emphasized was how important the decision we make about our career can be for our financial future, but not only what career we pick, because you want to pick one that's hopefully going to sustain you and also not stress you out that you're, you know, die young or something, but choosing a career that's going to benefit you in your financial future, but also knowing when to kind of assess how you're doing. Is it what you thought it was going to be? Is it time to maybe get a different job? Should you look for another job? Or maybe even if you're in a current position, what could be maybe your options to put yourself in such a way that you could get promoted, like if you're looking for an executive track. So I thought that maybe we could kind of fit some of that in here tonight about talking about maybe some of these people in our area in particular, even who may be in a position, executives that want to jump to another employer or something to that effect. So can you give us a highlight, Bonnie, about what we want to discuss tonight or some of the tips you're going to give us?
Sure, sure. Okay. And I'll try to touch on all the topics that you mentioned. But what I was thinking of discussing was how someone who's looking for a job, whether they're already employed or not, can put themselves into the strongest position possible to find a new job. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, I thought I would cover three main areas during tonight's broadcast, and those include the importance of really understanding your work identity, mm-hmm. the power of networking, and working effectively with search firms. And then I thought we could discuss what I'm also seeing as activity within the market.
Okay, great, great. And at some point, too, I do want to come back, too, and talk about, I know that your area specifically is executive searches in life sciences, healthcare, and healthcare services. And I like maybe as we get into more of the details later when we're talking about industries that are active right now, defining that a little bit so that
sure.
at least our listeners have a little bit of benefit of your area as well. So we're going to talk about understanding your work identity. So we want to talk about what that means, networking, you said, and then working with search firms. So we have probably a couple more minutes before our first break, Bonnie. So let's talk about understanding your work identity. How can we start with that?
Okay. Well, you know, when I think about that, I think you have to start by answering the question of how well do you know yourself? And what I mean by that is, what really matters to you? What are your values? What are your personal goals? What are your professional goals? And then you have to be realistic about your skills. You know, in what do you exceed? Where have your greatest competencies and accomplishments been? And I have to assume that many of your audience have been in the workforce for years.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what has been the feedback you've gotten from your bosses, your peers, your subordinates? In other words, how do others see you? And then I think the last part is that if you're working with a search firm or perhaps even an in-house recruiter and looking at a new position, they're going to provide you with a job spec against which you have to honestly answer the question of whether or not you're a fit in the role and the responsibility of the position. And then the hard work really starts, which is to determine whether you're a fit into the culture of the organization.
Okay, because you don't want to waste anyone's time. So being realistic saves you from the future heartache of getting denied the job when you weren't fit for it to begin with.
Exactly.
So it's about saving everyone's time in that instance. Okay, Bonnie, we are going to take our first quick break. You're just going to stay on the line. Folks, I want to give the number again. The phone number is 610-758-8255. 8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're talking with Bonnie Sharps this evening, and she's the Managing Director and Executive Vice President in the Philadelphia office of DHR International, which is an executive search firm. And Bonnie will describe the differences in executive search firms as we go through the show. We will be back in just a second.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
There are many ways to support WDIY, but one really fun way is to attend our annual party. Join us Saturday, February the 2nd at Miller Symphony Hall in Allentown for our Winter Blast. We'll have food, drinks, dancing, and live music from Giancarlo Sanchez, followed by the Lehigh Valley Soul Project. Proceeds will support our diverse programming, and this special event will help keep us on track financially. Tickets are just $45 for members, $60 for non-members, and can be purchased online at wdiy.org or by calling the station.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. And I have with me this evening my guest, Bonnie Sharps, Managing Director and Executive Vice President of DHR International, specializing in executive searches, in particular in the healthcare services field. So Bonnie is just giving us kind of a highlight of what we are going to talk about tonight, about understanding your work identity to best position yourself for future jobs, networking, and working with search firms. So before the break, Bonnie had mentioned, how well do you know yourself and be realistic about your skills and what job skills you have and how you can bring them to that next job. Bonnie, do you find that people are realistic about it? I mean, I know you're used to working with executives in particular, but do you run into people not really being realistic about it?
You know, the way I would answer that is that sometimes when someone has been looking for a job for a long time, I'm not going to say desperate, but they get over-eager to find something and will try to force fit themselves into a role. But most of the time, individuals with whom I speak understand what their skills are, and when we send them the job specification, they know whether or not that they've, you know, accomplished or fulfilled what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. And the comment you had said, when knowing or understanding your identity, knowing your strengths, you had also said, how do others see you? Now, how does someone measure that? Are you talking about, and you might have already said this, prior reviews that you've had with prior employers?
Absolutely. I mean, when individuals are in a company, typically they're going to be getting feedback from their bosses. Mm-hmm. If you sit in meetings and you work with your peers or even subordinates, they're going to give you feedback. Mm-hmm. And that's one method of getting input into what your strengths are and what your areas of improvement are.
Okay. And then sometimes what happens is people will have a job description and they'll say, well, I can do like 80% of that, but maybe not, you know, some of this. Is it still worthwhile to put your best foot forward? What I have found, Bonnie, just personally, I'm really clear. Now, I haven't had to apply for a job for a long time, but I have always been very, very clear about what I can and cannot do with employers. But what I have done is I might have said, you know what? I don't do corporate tax returns. That's not my strength nor my passion. If pressed, I know that my personality loves challenges and I would do it if I had to, but just so you know. So do you find that it's all right to use honesty as well? If there's a position that you think mostly you could work with, you know yourself, you're realistic about your skills, but maybe you still want to give it a stab.
Absolutely. I think when I talk with someone on the phone and they say, Bonnie, I see this job spec, and, you know, you've identified five what I'll call non-negotiables that this person has to have for the position. And what I mean by that is the client that I'm working for has and I've worked with them to develop this specification, but they're saying these are the five things we need this person to have.
Mm-hmm.
If the person on the other end of the phone for me says, I have four out of the five, that helps me because as I start a project, I'm going for all five mm-hmm. of those requirements. But sometimes you don't find someone who has all five. So mm-hmm. if someone is honest and they say, I'm strong in these four but not the fifth, I'll either keep them active in the project or I might bring them forward and say to the client, this is someone who fulfills 80% of what we're looking for. And based on, you know, some other soft skills that they've shared with me, I think we should take a look. So I think honesty is absolutely the best way, not just to be perceived or considered for a position, mm-hmm. but also to build a relationship with the search firm.
Okay, and then we talked about, so you want to make sure that you personally understand your skills, mm-hmm. your work identity, how people perceive you, what your capabilities are. So you kind of get that done, like around the job.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about fitting in with the culture, which is more than just your skills? What about the, you know, the personality yeah. piece of it, the
yeah.
work culture? I don't know how to describe that.
No, you're describing it perfectly.
Okay.
And, you know, as we just talked about previously, and my comment was that the hard work really starts when you have to figure out whether you fit into the culture of an organization. You know, let me start by sharing what I've observed, mm-hmm. and that is if someone takes a position, a job, where there is a very strong fit to their technical skills, and the job is also a good match to their personal and professional goals. And if it doesn't work out, in my experience, it's almost always because it was the wrong fit of personality or culture.
Mm-hmm.
So to your question of how do you discover if you'll fit in the culture,
mm-hmm.
And there's a couple different ways that I would answer that. One is, if you're working with a search consultant, and I do retained executive search,
mm-hmm.
but if you're working with me or my colleagues, we're obligated to help you understand the company, and that includes understanding who the leaders are, understanding who the peers are that you'll work with, even the subordinates. You know, what are their styles? What are their strengths? What are the challenges that they're facing? So that's part of it. The second is that you really have to do your homework, and you have to do your due diligence to learn more about the company's history, what its performance has been, what its market reputation is for how it treats its employees. And then what I would say is you need to leverage your network. You need to see if perhaps there's someone who currently does or used to work for the company that you know, and you have to reach out to them. And today, with tools such as LinkedIn, that is so much easier to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other comment I would make is you also have to use the interview process that you go through to make sure you're asking the right questions so that you can continually assess and validate the fit. And, you know, when I think of those questions, I think about asking, you know, does the company recognize and reward performance? Is it an environment where I can respectfully disagree with my boss, or do I have to toe the line and just go along with everything the person says?
Mm-hmm.
You have to assess the ethics of the company, and you need to understand if people have been let go in the past,
mm-hmm.
why? So, you know, assessing the culture of a company is hard work, and it takes time, and in many ways it might be the most important part of making sure that you're going to enjoy where you go and be able to stay.
You know, I think I've seen on the internet, it might be, and I apologize if I'm misstating the name, it might be called like Glassdoor or something. I've seen internet sites that will talk about like different companies and what mm-hmm. employees' comments are about them.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't seem quite fair to me. I'm not sure if it's valid or not. Do you ever hear about anyone talking about that or companies worrying about what might be said about them?
You know, social networking is here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got tools or systems like Twitter. You've got people who write blogs. part of what companies have to do today is they have to be monitoring what's being said about them on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very real, and it's a vehicle to go out and see what's being said about the company you're looking at.
Okay. Good resources out there one way or the other. So we got to be careful what's out there. Bonnie, we're coming up on our next break, and you mentioned networking. So when we come back from the next break, we'll move into talking about networking. And I also had a call come in off air. So when we come back, I'll start with answering that question, and then we'll move into networking. Folks, if you have questions this evening, you can call 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to Your Financial Choices here on WDIY Allentown. Lehigh Valley weather, currently 13 degrees. Our forecast tonight, slight chance of snow showers between 10 p.m. and 1 a.m., cloudy with a low around 8 degrees. The outlook for Thursday, cloudy through mid-morning, then gradual clearing with a high near 24. Thursday night, mostly clear with a low around 4. Friday, snow likely after 2, mostly cloudy with a high near 25. Friday night, snow likely, mainly before 2 a.m., cloudy with a low around 15. And the outlook for Saturday, just a slight chance of snow showers, partly sunny, with a high near 25 degrees.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are discussing job searches, putting yourself in the best position you can if you're going to be in the market for new jobs, and using a recruiter. And I'm lucky this evening to have with me someone with 30 years of experience in the industry, and her name is Bonnie Sharps. She currently serves as Managing Director and Executive Vice President in the Philadelphia office of DHR International. She specializes in executive searches, and in particular, retained executive searches. So Bonnie will talk more about that as we get closer to the end of the show. First, I want to answer a tax question that came in off air. Staffy called to ask, the student loans were paid off. Can I take a deduction for that? Staffy, what happens if in 2012 you paid off the student loans? There might have been interest that accrued during the year on that student loan that you would have paid, and the student loan provider is going to issue you a tax document indicating how much student loan interest was indeed paid for 2012. And if you file a 1040 tax return, you may be able to get a deduction for student loan interest. If you're single there and you make less than $60,000, you should be able to get the full deduction up to the limits they have. And there's a phase out between 60 and 75, and then it's completely phased out if you're single making more than 75. If you're married filing joint, it's completely phased out if you make more than 155. So some people who pay student loan interest may not be able to take it as a deduction. It all depends on how much other income you have. So you'll have to kind of run that through your software, or wait for that tax document to see how much it is when you get it and how much other income you have as to whether it's going to be a deduction for you. But it is on page one, and there is a line item for it. So hopefully you'll get a deduction, but congratulations on paying off the student loans. That is an awesome feeling, and I have to this day still remember the day my husband and I were done with our student loans. We were very, very excited. Okay, so thank you for that call. Other listeners, if you have questions this evening, you can call in at 610-758-8810. In particular, tonight we are discussing putting yourself in the best position you can for a new job search. We are talking with Bonnie Sharps. She's indicated making sure you understand your work identity, knowing your strengths, ensuring the right fit. How do you do that? You need to really know your own skills and what other people see you, and make sure that you're applying for jobs that meet those skills, etc. So Bonnie, we were also talking at the end of our last little segment about networking. So let's talk about how networking helps probably not only for companies doing searches, but also for we as employees or potential people looking for new jobs. So maybe you could talk on it about it from both perspectives.
Sure, I'm happy to. Lori, let me start by sharing the definition that I apply to networking.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the fundamental of networking, I call it give to get. And, you know...
Can you say that again, Bonnie? Give to get?
Give, G-I-V-E, give to get.
Okay, I like that.
And the other thing that I would say is that I think you can network at any time in any place. So what do I mean by that? You know, you can network with your peer group in a company. If you're a busy parent, you can network on the soccer field when your kids are playing. You can network at a party. You can network over a drink with friends. So it's often, again, to me, about knowing what those around you, who they are, who you trust and like, understanding what they want to accomplish, and helping them accomplish that. And so first, you help them, you give them, and then when the time is right, you ask for help, or you get the get. So, you know, that's somewhat a fundamental belief that I have about networking.
Mm-hmm. You
and,
know, can I,
yeah.
can I, sorry, I want to interrupt for a second, because,
sure.
you know, it's funny, I came here from Michigan. And I laugh because I was kind of in culture shock in the Lehigh Valley, and I apologize to anybody who lives in the Lehigh Valley if they feel differently. But in Michigan, you can get into everybody's personal business in the grocery store. I mean, we share everything. So you're going mm-hmm. through the grocery store with, you know, a bottle of aspirin, and the teller would say, or the cashier would say, hey, you know, how you feeling? Are you not feeling well? You know,
yeah,
you get into everybody's business. You know, here
right.
people are very mm-hmm. private. So I'm just going to throw out to the listeners, it is such so much more fun when you share. You know,
yeah.
and I think that sometimes we tend to be a little bit more closed. And if we do want to be good about networking, and in today's economy, when tomorrow it could be you, then sharing, I think, what goes around comes around. That give to get definitely can work. And I don't think people should be shy about sharing or be closed. I think people need to be a little bit more comfortable with you know, kind of talking about where they are and where they are in their career and if they're struggling and looking for better things. So that's my little comment to your give to get and where we can network, which is, you know, on the soccer fields, drinks with friends, that kind of thing. I think people need to be a little bit more open. So go ahead now.
Well, I think that individuals in the workforce understand that networking is a significant part of finding a job. It is. If I, and this is Bonnie's opinion, so mm-hmm. I'm not dealing with statistical data here, but my belief is that 50% of positions, maybe 60%, are filled through search firms, and the balance of 40 to 50% is done through networking.
Mm-hmm.
So networking is here to stay, and you've got to find a way to do that. And part of the advice that I would give is that when I think about networking, I sometimes will classify or qualify my network in the following way.
Mm-hmm.
I look for what I call the A player.
Mm-hmm.
And these are people either within your company, your neighborhood, it could be religious affiliations. These are people who you respect and who respect you. And these are folks who you believe would help you if you asked.
Mm-hmm.
So the approach that I've always taken, but I happen to really like people and I like to help people, so for me it's easy, but you have to start by understanding their personal and professional goals, and then you see if there's people that you can introduce them to which would help them expand their network. And this goes back to the give to get.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you've done that, then you can ask the same back.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, what I've always valued in networking, it's being introduced to people who you don't already know, so they in turn will help to expand your contacts.
Mm-hmm.
But again, my approach to networking is you give first and then you get something back. And then you had mentioned a point earlier about how challenging it can be to network when you're really busy. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got two-income families, mm-hmm. you've got, you know, children, you've got other commitments. So mm-hmm. when you're managing a family and a job, you have to find whatever you can as flexibility to network. And sometimes I'll say to people, if you're in a job where you don't have to clock in at 8 or 8:30 or leave at 5, mm-hmm. instead of going right into the office at 8:30, go into a breakfast meeting with someone. Mm. You know, you have to find a way, or, you know, leave the office at 4 and meet someone for coffee or a drink.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I find interesting about networking, when I talk to people, and I talk to a lot of people who are in transition, mm-hmm. they're looking for a job, and it's amazing how effective people are at networking when they have lost a job. If they make it, they make networking a full-time job, as they should. But I think it's equally important that you network when you have a full-time job. So, you know, I'm a big believer that even if you're employed, once or twice a week, meet someone for lunch, meet someone for coffee, meet someone for breakfast, and that it's really important that you keep your network, I call it, warm and active.
It's a great point, and I think it also would probably help, you know, you feel more fulfilled as well. Bonnie, we have a couple questions that came in, but we have to go to break. So when we come back, we're going to take those questions from Beth in Whitehall and Lois in Easton. So stay tuned, Beth and Lois, and we'll take those questions when we get right back. Stay tuned.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY Allentown. The time is 6:31.
Welcome back, folks. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have with me this evening Bonnie Sharps, who is a managing director and executive vice president in the Philadelphia office of DHR International, specializing in executive searches in life sciences, healthcare, and healthcare services, advanced technology, and industrial sectors. And Bonnie comes to us with 30 years of experience in the industry. Bonnie, we had a couple questions come in off air, and I want to throw those out, and I might give some of my comments as well, but I'll let you go first. We had Beth from Whitehall call in, and she had said, I am passionate about what I do, and I have a proven track record of success, but sometimes I struggle with putting it down on paper. Do you have any resume and cover letter tips or strategies?
Okay. I'll try to help Beth. I hope I can.
Okay.
If there are two answers that I would provide.
Mm-hmm.
One is, if you're in an early stage of your career and perhaps financially you have to do it yourself, there are formats out there. You can go into Microsoft Word. You can find resume formats that you can try to follow.
Mm-hmm.
The ideal, however, is that there are professional resume writers mm-hmm. who take the time to get to know you, to help you articulate what your accomplishments were, and always you want to try to quantify those accomplishments on a resume.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can afford to spend the money, I always recommend using a professional resume writer.
Okay.
I really do.
Okay. Great. What I would have added, too, is if someone can't afford that professional person, rather than just doing them it themselves, sometimes it helps if you have a friend or someone who knows your work ethic and your skills to sit with them and bounce things off. Because one thing I've realized, I've helped people write resumes before, and sometimes people will discount their skills and they don't realize the strengths they themselves have because they take it for granted that this is normal or this is what everyone should have or do. They don't realize that it could really be quite a strength to be someone who's very organized or someone who mm-hmm. Is detailed. I mean, depending on what kind of job they're going for, that could be a real strength for them, and mm-hmm. and they may discount that. So sometimes it helps if you can't afford a professional resume writer and you have to do it yourself, get someone else to come in and brainstorm with you and use active words and try not to repeat, you know, the same thing. And going back to what you said earlier, Bonnie, too, knowing yourself and knowing your skills and don't pretend you're something that you're not, I think that is powerful. And only apply for jobs that you will fit, because it's very frustrating for all involved if you're applying for things you don't qualify for anyway. So that's good recommendations on the resume. As far as cover letters, I don't see cover letters as often anymore. I love cover letters. To me, and Bonnie, you can comment on this, to me, the cover letter is where I get to show my personality. My resume is what shows my skills. So when I have, and I haven't done this in a long time, but when I've written a cover letters in my prior jobs, I tried to make them exciting and interesting because I'm a creative person and I'd like that to come through in my cover letter. So I don't think there's anything wrong with using cover letters anymore, but I'm not seeing them as often. Do you experience that as well, Bonnie?
Two comments. I think what you said about cover letters is spot on. There's nothing I could add in terms of how better to approach it than what you said. I do see them.
Mm-hmm.
I do see them. They will, you know, when I get a an unsolicited resume, often there's a cover letter attached. Sometimes mm-hmm. I even get it in the mail. So, but I concur with everything you said. I think it's the opportunity to show your creativity. I'd even like to add something to the point you made, which I thought was excellent in terms of getting input from someone who knows you regarding your resume, and share that I have actually been a part of this, and it's called creating your board of advisors,
mm-hmm.
where you bring together 4, 5, 6 people, more even than what you were referring to as one person,
mm-hmm.
and together this group helps you to really assess your strengths and to help build your profile.
Mm-hmm.
So it just carries what you said earlier a little bit further, but I really do concur with everything you've just said.
That's great. And that actually reminds me, too, of the article that I wrote for that Lehigh Valley Woman magazine, where it's for women. And someone had commented that women who may have chosen to be home for a while with their children, it's harder for them to go back into the workplace. And mm-hmm. what, you know, can they do? And I referred in that article to make sure that you're aware of the skills that you're using even while you're not working, and mm-hmm. make sure that you are still networking and trying to hone your skills or add to your skills by either continuing education and that type of thing when you're out of the workforce for a while. But again, even those, you know, even women or men who are out of the workforce for a while have skills that they are developing even while they're not working. So they need to make sure they capture those as well. We also had a call from Lois in Easton, and she said, what is the best way to transfer your skills into a totally different area of work? For example, a retired person beginning an encore career. So what is the best way to transfer your skills into a totally different area of work?
I think that, you know, my immediate thought, I would break it into two different segments. If you're retired, I think that's very different than if you're still in a very active stage of your career.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're retired, I mean, we all know stories about the person who went into Starbucks, you know, because they love people and they're able to engage with people. Or the person who is the greeter at Walmart,
mm-hmm.
or the person who goes into McDonald's. So when I think of someone who is at a retirement age, it's what do you just enjoy doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the hard skills.
Mm-hmm.
It's the soft skills that you leverage and you apply.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're at a different point in your career where, you know, income is critical and continuing to succeed, I think it's a different discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of transferring skills, I think it's ideal if you can be in a company that
mm-hmm.
knows you
mm-hmm.
and recognizes some fundamental skills and allows you or moves you into something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to really what I did in my career, having been in a field organization
mm-hmm.
where I dealt directly with my clients who were hospitals and health systems. And then I moved into a very technical operation where I was dealing with software engineers and architects of systems.
Mm-hmm.
That's ideal if you can do that within your own company. Doing that outside of your own company can be a bit more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean it can't be done, but it's more challenging.
Right.
So I think any time someone can enhance the skills they have and create the opportunity within their own company to move into a new division, to move into a new functional space, it's ideal. I think if someone today can get into the international space,
mm-hmm.
if your life permits and you can go to China or you can go to Europe or other areas, you know, besides China in Asia, that's incredibly powerful to a resume. So if you can look for those opportunities within your company, many companies want to find opportunities like that for their employees, I think it's fantastic.
You know, this also goes back to your point that you were making at the very beginning of the show about understanding your work identity and knowing
mm-hmm.
your strengths. And I bet if I looked at your resume, it would be that it sounds to me like you take on challenges and you're going to be powerful and masterful at whatever you do. So it doesn't matter what job you have. So I think that people need to pay attention to that when they're working in any position to make sure that it is not just necessarily that, oh, I know how to do a tax return, as my example, but that I'm a problem solver. And then how can I take that skill and transfer it into something else? Real quick, my brother worked for Dow, still does, works for Dow Chemical, and he worked on the chemical side. And people said, there's no way you can transition over to the plastic side. And guess what? He did, because his skills were that he was a problem solver. He loves and is passionate about learning. He learned it and he transitioned very, very well. We did have a couple more calls come in, and I want to see if I can get at least one more before our break. We had Michael from Brynecksville call in, and he asked, what is the best way to determine your value as an employee, whether it's to advance with your current employer or if you are looking for a new job? Let me repeat that. What is the best way to determine your value as an employee, whether it's to advance with your current employer or if you are looking for a new job?
It's a great question.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great question. And the first answer that I would give is be proactive about that. And what I mean is, if you get phone calls from people who do what I do, and we're going to talk about the difference between retained and contingency search, but the point remains, if you get phone calls from individuals in the search industry who are trying to fill a position, it always amazes me when people don't call you back, because I think to myself, what better way of learning my value, of learning what's happening with the competition.
Right.
So
right.
Call search people back, because you'll get a feel for what's the open position, what's the compensation, what's the skill they're looking for. So that's a key way of understanding your value in the market. And then there are, I mean, your network, right? Your
mm-hmm.
network. Who else do you know who's doing something similar or the next level up? And people, obviously, within a company, you're not supposed to talk compensation. And I'm not advocating that you do that, but
mm-hmm.
you have people and colleagues and friends who are in different companies, share that
mm-hmm.
and get a feel for what is the base structure, the bonus structure. That's another vehicle for understanding your value in the market. But clearly, working with search firms, I'm sure there are systems out there. There are databases. I don't know how easy it is to access them for a search firm. We have access to that. You know, there are databases like Hoover's or others that show some data.
Mm-hmm.
You can go on to websites of companies, and a lot of companies will reveal at pretty multiple levels compensation structures of executives. Now, again, I'm often dealing with CEOs, CFO, CIO,
right.
COO, and that information is frequently included on company websites.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, public companies, there are financial records as well that they, and you know this, that they're, you know, filling out on a quarterly and a yearly basis that includes compensation information.
Mm-hmm. One thing I'll add to that as well, which I try to have mentioned in prior shows, is when people are looking at not only their value as an employee, they have to remember what that all means. It's not always just about the salary. It could be you have to consider bonuses, you have to consider vacation days, you have to consider health care benefits, you have to consider 401k matching, or, you know, an employer putting money in, even if it's not matching. So, Michael from Brinecksville, it's also, you want to make sure that you're valued, but you have to make sure how you're measuring that value. It's more than just here's the standard salary. It's what else is included in that, making sure you're comparing apples to apples. And also the value of just your well-being, because if you have an employer who just loves you, I mean, that to me means something, where versus if you're stressed out and getting yelled at all the time. I mean, you can make the same amount of money at both jobs, but I would much rather work at a position where, you know, you're also valued for who you are. Bonnie, we're going to take our last break, and then when we come back, we're going to take, we'll have the question from Mark in Emmaus, and it looks like another one might even be coming. So Bonnie, this has been great. If you have questions, the number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY-FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
Okay, we are back with your financial choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have with me this evening Bonnie Sharps, Managing Director and Executive Vice President in the Philadelphia office of DHR International, specializing in executive searches in the healthcare fields. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. We had Mark from Emmaus called, and he asked, how much do layoffs affect your ability to get a new job? And what he was referring to is, he said he's in a company where there's always talks of cutbacks, and he's not sure if he should just wait it out or if he should be looking to find a new job. Do employers have a preference as to which path you decide to take? I'm worried that a layoff will be less desirable on my resume, but the job I have now is a good one, and I'm not sure whether or to take the risk of leaving first. Any comment on that?
Sure. You know, I'm sitting here smiling. It's a really tough one. I'm going to throw a couple thoughts out, and hopefully this will be of help. I never advocate, if someone's in a role and they like what they're doing and they're doing well, but they see the environment around them, meaning their company is doing reductions in force, and so there's uncertainty, and I understand that. I believe that you always keep your ear to the ground. I said this before, and I don't mean it in any way to be self-serving. I felt this way when I was in the corporate world. If someone calls you about an opportunity, listen. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing well and you don't really want to leave, don't. Mm-hmm. So now it comes down to what happens if I'm caught up in what they call the RIF, right? Reduction mm-hmm. in force.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to give a couple comments on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I speak for myself. I don't speak for everyone in search.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you that in the past, and it does exist somewhat today, but in a much smaller amount of bias, in the past, when someone was unemployed, I know for a fact that there were some search consultants who would not bring those people forward.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very, very different view of this.
Mm-hmm.
And my view is that there are incredibly talented people who have been caught up in economic downturns where their companies have had reductions in force, and it is in no way a reflection on their capability or skill.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, when I have a candidate who was caught up in something like that, I never hesitate to bring them forward for a position. I never hesitate. Mm-hmm. I do know that there will be some out there who do what I do who may hesitate, but I think that's fewer and fewer, mm-hmm. because it's a very different world than it was in the 70s and 80s when people thought they were going to, you know, be at IBM for life. And I don't mean to pick on IBM. I'm just saying right. that the big corporation where you're going to retire with the gold watch, right, that doesn't happen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a different world. We understand that. And, you know, I would not be arrogant enough to give Mark you specific advice except to say, if you love what you're doing and it seems to be going well for you, sometimes when companies are laying off, they need to really go into the top talent they have remaining.
Mm-hmm.
And great opportunities can be presented.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very personal decision, and you have to do what's right for you and your family, whether it is to start looking now while you're employed or to wait it out. I mean, that's a decision that's very personal, but I would not hesitate to bring an excellent candidate forward who's been caught up in a reduction in force.
Mm-hmm. And then that goes back, you said, keep your ear to the ground, and it's about the give to get, keep your networking going. If you love your job and you want to stay there, fine, but it doesn't mean that you have blinders on and don't realize that something could happen, so always keep yourself prepared. And I also talk about making sure that people have reserves on hand, you know, their cash reserves, in case they are caught up in a reduction in force, that they have, you know, some opportunities, and sometimes people find better opportunities. You don't see it when it's happening to you, but eventually you can. Now, Bonnie, I know that we want to talk about what specifically you do and what kind of recruiter you are, because it's different than, there's differences in recruiters. So I want to talk a little bit about that, because we actually have had a couple more people call who have asked for contact information or other local resources that would offer similar services. So let's talk about what kind of recruiting you do, and then even how it might even apply in our Lehigh Valley area, because I think that was interesting, and I loved the opportunity to be able to talk with you and bring you on the show, and it's about educating here. So I would love for you to talk a little bit about what kind of recruiter you are, and then what else is out there, and go ahead.
Okay. And, you know, what I'm going to present, or the way I'll explain it, I'll make it a little black and white,
mm-hmm.
but there's gray as well,
mm-hmm.
meaning that there's a blending. But let me explain about DHR International, and I'll talk about the difference of what we do and another structure of search.
Mm-hmm.
So DHR International is a retained executive search firm, but there's also a contingency search structure that exists in the market.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start by a retained search firm. So what do we do? First, we are hired exclusively by a company to fill a specific role.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, the expectation that the company and any candidate should have of us is that we have spent a lot of time meeting members of the executive team, and really studying the company, learning its culture, really understanding the position. And then we have a staff which is dedicated to performing market research, and they're doing that to identify the top pool of talent, both currently employed or perhaps on the market, that are going to best meet the position spec. And I share this because it helps to... I think it will help the listeners understand some of the differences, but a retained mm-hmm. firm is typically paid over over the first 90 or so days of a search.
Mm-hmm.
And we are always driven to try to close a search in 90 to 120 days, but if we don't, if it takes longer, we don't stop until that position is filled.
Mm-hmm.
What's important to keep in mind about a retained executive search firm is that we work for the company that hires us.
Mm-hmm.
They're paying us. So they give us, but we also help them to craft a defined set of requirements, which we're then tasked to fill, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, a contingency search firm operates differently. They are also trying to fill a specific role, but by the nature of being contingent, they're usually not paid until the position is filled.
Mm-hmm.
So by nature of covering their costs and generating revenue, in my experience, they tend to limit the amount of time they will commit or spend trying to fill a position.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that
right.
makes some sense, because
right.
it distinguishes
right.
in part. And the other thing that I will say is it is very rare that a company will use anything other than a retained search firm when they're filling a very senior level position.
Right.
So, I think you asked in terms of working with a search firm. Was that part of your question,
right.
Laurie? I don't wanna...
Right. So if there are listeners out there who think, gosh, maybe I should work with a recruiting firm,
right.
they aren't going to reach someone like you if they want you to go find a job for them, because it's the company or the hospital or the pharmaceutical company that has hired you to go find someone. It's
well,
not the
yes,
employee.
Kind of yes and no. A little mm-hmm. yes and no.
Okay.
Because
that's
we're
the gray.
So, yeah. So, you know, what I get a lot of emails and phone calls from people who I don't know,
mm-hmm.
who find my name or were given my name. And my goal, just professionally, is to call everyone back. And I'm not advocating that 1,000 people start calling me,
mm-hmm.
by any means. But what I would say that is, if you approach a search firm, and many people do, you want to make sure that the firm that you reach out to focuses on the industry that you're in, or
mm-hmm.
the kind of position that you're seeking.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you reach out to a specific person, usually their profile is going to be online, meaning an individual search consultant. Make sure that they support the industry that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
But understand that when you call a retained search firm, unless we have a position that's a match to your background, there's a limited amount of time that we're going to devote to you, just because we only have so much time to get our jobs done. But this is also, this goes back to what we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to the give before you get,
mm-hmm.
because you want to create a relationship with the search firm. You want to get on their radar screen. And the best way to do that is when you call someone like me, is to try to understand what I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
What positions do I need to fill?
Mm-hmm.
And you may know people in your network. Again, it's the give before you get.
Mm-hmm.
You may know people in your network who might be a great fit for a role. It may not be for you. And provide names. And that's what helps. That's what makes you a friend to a search firm.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing I would say is stay in touch. I mean, you can reach out to a search firm. We are not executive coaches.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to be able to help you think through your career and what you should be doing and, you know, to the question mark, ask, should I stay, should I go? That's not what we do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of us do it because we want to help someone, but that's
mm-hmm.
not fundamentally
mm-hmm.
what a retained search consultant does. But the point is, people will often establish a relationship with me. They try to help me identify great talent for a position I'm working on, and I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And so building a relationship, staying in touch with a search firm, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fine.
So we only just have a few seconds left, Bonnie. So if people are interested in working with search firms, they need to understand one is retained, which typically the company retains a firm like yours to go identify candidates for a specific job, or there's contingency, and then that firm is going to be paid when the job is filled. And typically it's the company that's paying that contingency firm, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Bonnie, it went so fast and we ran out of time. So I thank you so much for being here. You had tons of great information because there was so much more I still wanted to talk to you about, which was all these buzzwords that you've used tonight. I think it's important for people to understand things like hard skills, soft skills, being proactive, reduction in force. If there's, for example, you know, hospitals in our area or pharmaceutical companies, someone who wanted to retain Bonnie Sharps from DHR International, how do they reach you?
Well, that's really kind. Well, you can go into the DHR International website, mm-hmm. and you'll find me there and my email, but it's first initial, last name, at DHRInternational.com. My cell phone is there. It would be a pleasure to work with companies in the Lehigh Valley or health systems and to help them find top executives.
Okay.
So,
Bonnie, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Thank you, listeners, for calling in. I appreciate all the questions. Coming up next, Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Oh, next week I have Sherry Free, a CPA, who's going to talk to us about the Pennsylvania Institute of Certified Public Accountants and what resources are available on the PICPA website. We will look forward to her next week. Thanks. Have a good night, everyone.
This is WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and HD.